do my podcast in the dark?
Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Okay, sure.
Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Wednesday, January 15th, 2014. It's just after 3 UTC while we're recording this. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here again. Hello, Yvonne.
Yo.
And I've got two things to say right up front. One, this is our first sort of normal show, and like we've had 3 weeks of oddball shows. There was one with me doing a solo show, and then we had our retrospective, and then our predictions, and so we're back to a normal show for the first time in what seems like forever.
Yes, that's what it seems like. I just was thinking about that today. Yeah.
Second, you might notice that the last couple shows, people listening might have noticed I sounded a little bit funny. There was a little bit more of an echo, and that's because in the middle of my solo show, my microphone stopped working, and I had to use the internal mic on the computer. And just a few minutes before the show today, I replaced the cable that connected the microphone to the computer, and lo and behold, it worked again.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, I knew I wanted to try that right away, but I didn't have one. So, I ordered one, and then it came, and then it sat in a box for a week. And anyway, I finally tried it. Go ahead, go.
You come.
He wants me to go potty with him.
That's great.
I'm gonna go potty. I'll be right back. Well, okay, I'm not gonna go. He's gonna go, but yeah, I'm gonna go with him.
Yeah, okay. All right.
And tell him how...
Come on.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620, and LigonierRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
I hit the radio dial and tuned it up all the way.
I got a dance.
Dancing in the moonlight.
Classic music for a classic American town. AM 1620 and in stereo at LigonierRadio.com. The Valley.
Okay, I'm back. Sorry about the interruptions, guys. Sometimes, like at this age, sometimes they're absolutely fine. They want to do everything by themselves, and sometimes they're like, you got to come with me.
Sometimes and you feel like a nut. Sometimes
here.
You don't.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, my wife is now corralling him and trying to have him do. I think she's going to give him a bath or something, which should keep him busy.
There you go.
Okay, so I was just saying the microphone. There are different words that start with micro.
Yeah.
Anyway, it works a lot better now because new cable. Well, so
it's always good to have a cable that works.
Yeah, and the old one looked cooler, though. The old one was like the silvery thingy. It looked like it had ropes inside it, whatever.
Oh, yeah. I know what you were talking about. I like those cables.
Yeah, it looked kind of cool, but this one's just a plain old black USB cable, but whatever. Anyway, we have a show today. We have a regular show today. We have, talking about the news of the week. And actually, I actually thought of one more thing since I talked to Yvonne before the show. But here's what's going on this week. One, there's this whole Chris Christie blow up.
Richgate.
One of the people who follows me on Twitter and I follow called it Bridgenado, and I've heard a few people use that as well. And there were a few other Chris Christie related things, like the how they used the Sandy relief money to buy commercials that starred him during an election year, things like that. But then we also have
that's neat.
Yeah, that's cool. Then we also have Iran And not specifically Iran doing anything, but our Congress, you know, the Congress who can never get around to doing anything seems on the verge of passing more sanctions against Iran over the president's objections. There's that.
Well, it's pretty simple to veto them. I mean,
they're very close to a veto-proof majority, actually.
You think on both the House and Senate?
It looks that way. They're not quite there yet. I don't think they'll manage that. To be
honest, I don't think they'll manage.
We'll talk about that later. But anyway, they're close. They're close. They're within spitting distance of veto proof. There was a big decision on net neutrality today or yesterday, I should say. At Google bought Nest, the thermostat people that Yvonne's talked about before, because he's got one. Yvonne's got two. And then finally, the thing that I hadn't thought to bring up, but I should have, which is CES. There were a few things that happened at CES.
Michael Bay, collapsed the teleprompter? I mean, that was kind of funny.
We can talk a little bit about 4K TVs and stuff. But anyway.
Oh, okay.
So let's just jump right in. Chris Christie. So, for anybody who's not familiar, who hasn't been paying any attention at all, Chris Christie, the whole thing that came up is basically some members of his staff apparently orchestrated traffic problems next to the George Washington Bridge.
I guess if I understood correctly...
Daddy, hide me quick!
Hide you quick?
Yes!
Why? Is someone trying to give you a bath?
Yes.
but you like baths.
I don't.
You're gonna have fun in the bath.
I told you I will play with you.
We'll play with you after. Have a good bath. And there he goes.
There he goes. Anyway, all right, as we were saying,
members of Chris Christie's staff organized traffic jams, basically by closing lanes heading towards the George Washington Bridge. And there's been a whole lot of things around that. Basically, you know, why were they doing it exactly? Like, the initial statements were a retribution against the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey, for not endorsing Christie. Is a Democratic mayor, but Christie was collecting endorsements of Democratic mayors during the election campaign. There's a Rachel Maddow theory that it was related. It wasn't actually against the mayor at all, but for an assembly person. I believe it was an assembly person who was blocking a judicial nomination or something like that that Christie wanted, was basically causing him trouble in the legislature. And then there's another that this is related to a development project in Fort Lee and basically showing some muscle that, hey, this development project that you're all excited about is worth nothing if the traffic into the bridge isn't good or something like that.
Right.
And so the whole thing is Christie fired some people. He's spent a lot of time apologizing. Although his apology was one of these, you know, he held a 2-hour press conference on this, but he is very much concentrating on being mad that these people lied to him and, you know, insisting that he knew nothing about it and stuff like that. There wasn't really an apology that was directly, you know, hey, I'm sorry for inconveniencing people so much.
Well, and I heard and a little bit about that.
Alex, it's time for your bath. Bye. He'll be in the water soon, I hope.
Well, this whole bath thing has been worked out so well anyway so far. Anyway, I read a whole bunch of this stuff. I think that regardless of the reasons, it's very obvious that the stuff was done for it was for political purposes. It was to put pressure on people, whoever the hell it was. There, you know, these guys. I mean, there was like some of the I read some of the communications where it was very obvious these people were just trying to fuck around, you know, with these guys because they didn't like whatever the hell they were doing.
And whoever the target was, which it continues to be unclear.
Right. Right.
Like the actual evidence that, you know, there have been all kinds of people sort of stating who they think the targets are, but right. The actual documents released so far don't actually ever say anything. Like,
right.
We're putting pressure on this guy, or we're out to get whatever. It's very unclear. Presumably, like, if you want to actually punish somebody or put pressure on them, they kind of have to know that they're the target of something, and it certainly seems like the mayor didn't. I don't know if any of these other people did. They haven't spoken up.
Well, I mean, but let's face it. I mean, you know, look, sometimes it's irrelevant. I mean, you know, think about it. I mean, they may have just been wanting to make them miserable, and let's face it.
Yeah.
If they go and they cause a massive traffic jam into your damn town where you live in, damn it, you're going to be irritated, and you don't know why. I mean, I would say this. If I went and I was leaving my house, and then all of a sudden, every morning, like, out of the four lanes we got, like, two were blocked, okay, every morning, okay, for about 2 weeks, I would be quite irritated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not for nothing. So, I mean, mission accomplished in that respect.
Well, yeah, but if you don't know who to be irritated at, I mean, okay, maybe if your goal is just to...
Well, I think irritate. The goal was just to irritate. I mean, I don't see that they were going to get, like, something, like, I don't think they did it. You see, that's the whole thing about this, why it's so childish. I don't think they did it to get them to, like, back down on their position. I just think they did it to fuck with these people.
Yeah. Now, so here's the thing. You know, going forward on this, I mean, one of the reasons this is getting so much attention is obviously that Christie has been talked a lot about for 2016. I mean, you know, you and I, like, I don't know, 6 months ago, were saying it's way too early to say anything, but if we had to say anything right now, it's going to be Christie versus Clinton.
Right.
You know? And that's
this
why
thing
we're
may die
like,
down in 6 months. I mean, who knows? Well, I mean, everybody may forget about this crap.
Well, let's talk about that a bit more, but if Christie was not being talked about as a presidential candidate, this would have been, like, you know, 30 seconds in the news, and we wouldn't talk about it anymore.
I mean, I thought about that, too. Well, here's one thing.
Yeah, I heard a number of people specifically say, hey, look, you know, corruption and abuse of power is not exactly unusual in New Jersey.
Well, we're making, when I was in New York, it's like, we were making fun of, like, that they should have a TV show that's called Jersey Without the Mob.
Uh-huh.
You know, or, like, Jersey Without Corruption, and how, you know, that it would be, like, this alternate reality of, like, how New Jersey would be without any of that. And that would be the show. That's all the show was. So, yeah. So, they have a very big reputation for this kind of shenanigans and stuff. So, I guess, you know, it's a big yawn. Okay? I get that. But, I actually, the only thing that the other day really kind of piqued my interest, okay, in terms of how bad this could really turn out. Somebody was talking about whether there could be, you know, especially against Christie, given that the candidate for, you know, people are a potential candidate for president, was the potential for criminal charges.
Yeah.
And I was like, criminal charges? And I'm like, why? And, you know, a couple of people said, listen, say, for example, somebody was sick and trying to get to a hospital or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these officials went and closed down lanes to without any reason, and they prevented somebody to get to a hospital in a timely manner or cause her death.
Well, and this talk, there's at least one emergency case that it may have been a contributing factor in the woman's death, but she was 91, she had a heart attack or something like that, so it's, you know, it's questionable one way or the other, but her ambulance was delayed. Because of
well, I mean, that could open up some serious charges to these guys. And that was the one that really, because I thought, well, whatever, why the hell would anybody, you know, get charged for that? That was the only thing that really...
Well, there's actually more than that. So, like,
I mean, to me, I'm saying to me,
but I mean potential felonies and such. Like I tweeted a link to an article that was posted on Daily Kos, which is a very liberal website, by the way, for anybody who doesn't know. But it lists some of Christie's potential felonies. It was posted on January 9th. And so if you go through it, you know, there's the New Jersey official misconduct law.
Okay.
There's obstructing administration of law or other governmental function. There's there's a list of some others here. And then if there was any sort of cover up involved,
right.
You know, then there are even more that get piled on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all relating to misusing governmental resources for, you know, non-governmental purposes. There's also apparently the traffic study that, you know, it's one of the things they say is, oh, well, this was part of a traffic study.
Traffic study, right.
Well, apparently the traffic study in question was essentially approved just to be this and was the specific traffic study in question.
What is a traffic study? Hey, how does traffic flow when you close out two lanes? Oh, it flowed like shit.
Yes, but the thing is, the actual traffic study that they pointed to was for a town that was like, you know, 30 miles away or something for a project that was completely unrelated to the George Washington Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, and you know, they basically approved $60,000 for this study. So it's misuse of government funds as well. You know, so. And I could have some of those numbers and things wrong, but yeah, the general gist is there. Anyway, so the question on all of this, of course, is, you know, is there in fact going to be any impact on Christie and his chances, et cetera, et cetera?
You know what? I think it could, but I got to be honest with you. It may be way too early.
Well, here's what everybody's saying, is fundamentally it comes down to this. You know, he had this two-hour press conference where he, in no uncertain terms, denied knowing anything. If he's telling the truth at this point, it probably will blow over. I mean, because then it's just a matter of, okay, he wasn't paying enough attention to what his underlings were doing, or he was, you know, doing something vague, like creating an environment where people thought this was okay. And certainly people can criticize him for those things. But
yeah, but it's not criminal.
But it's different from actually knowing. Like, it becomes the, you know, well, you suck because you don't know what's going on, and you make that an argument, but it's different than saying you actually actively engaged in something as petty and stupid as this. And so, but if they determine if anything whatsoever comes out that indicates that he did know about this stuff,
oh, he's fucked.
Then he's fucked because it's not
well,
just, not
but,
just,
but unless it could be, well,
here's the thing.
I'm taking that back for 1 second.
Okay.
I'm going to say this. You know what? I mean, Clinton survived Jennifer Flowers, for God's sakes. I mean, what the heck? It's early enough that I think he could be even survive this.
That is always possible, but then what happens is, in this case, if he was determined that he was lying, then you've got a double whammy. One, he was involved in this ridiculous thing to begin with.
Two,
he flat out lied to everybody in the press conference.
I totally get that. I get that. But the only point I have about this is, people have survived worse.
Oh yeah, they have. And it, like a lot of people say, like, you know, if you're in some scandal or whatever, the only way, you know, you actually are guaranteed to lose is if you're like, okay, I resign.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise you fight it out. Most of the time you end up sticking around.
Yeah.
It's the people who are like, you know, I'm going to resign because this is so shameful. They're the ones who are done. The people who stick around and say, you know, I did a wrong thing. I'm sorry. And, you know, kick me out if you want to.
right.
Usually aren't actually kicked out.
Right.
And so we do have a long time left here. But one of the things that, you know, people have sort of pointed out is, this apparently is, you know, Christie, if you talk to local New Jersey folks, and I used to be New Jersey, but that was a long time ago. This is not this particular thing may be, getting all kinds of news, but I mean, he's known as a bully. You know, he's known as somebody who, you know, engages in that kind of sort of ruthless, right on the edge of underhanded politics, you know, and so if there might be more. This is going to encourage people to dig further into his background and what he's been doing and other situations. And of course, if he does run for president, then, you know, you have everybody searching for every little bit of dirt. You know, that's part of running for president. I don't think he's done yet. I've read a number of people this week saying he's done. He's done.
He's not done. He's not even remotely done. I mean, this is just so early. I mean, I wouldn't write him off. No.
Now, the thing is with Christie, that he's one of these candidates who the quote-unquote establishment somewhat likes him because he's a little bit more moderate on some issues. He's perceived as more electable. He's perceived as someone who can get Democrats to vote for him. But the conservative base hates him because he's not a conservative.
Yeah, but you know what? The fucking conservative base is, you know, a lot of people are already fed up with the damn conservative base.
But here's the thing. Like, in the Republican primary process, the base has a lot of influence. I mean, they may have less influence when it comes to time for the general election, but during the primary process, they're important. You can't get around them. They're the ones who are excited and go to the polls and bother to go out to the primaries and caucuses and all of those kinds of things.
I get that, but, you know, like I said, way too early, like right now. I don't know. We'll see how this... I mean, it's just too early. I mean, I still think that he's got plenty of time to recover from this.
He's got...
Unless this turns to some kind of, like, a criminal, you know, thing or something.
Well, and
or
there
whatever.
Are investigations that have spun up this week.
Right.
So we'll see if they lead anywhere.
Right. If it turns criminal, then that's another story. But if it doesn't, then, you know... I think he's got plenty of time to recover from this crap.
Yeah, I generally agree. I mean, I think it is damaging, but if you have something that's going to be damaging come out, this is when you want it to come out, if you're doing the presidential thing.
Hell yeah.
You know, this Absolutely. Is a kind of, you know, you don't want this coming out, you know, a week before Iowa and New Hampshire.
No.
You want this coming out now. And right. So that you can deal with it, you can react to it, and you can, just through the passage of time, people forget, and, you know, people will try to bring it up again, you know, when it's closer to primaries, but people will be like, oh, yeah, that's old news. Why are you bringing that up, you know? Because that's just the way the cycle works. I mean, like, if you get it out there and behind you and whatever, people are, you know, they bake it into their consciousness, and it's no longer a deciding factor. We'll see. Like, again, if more keeps dripping out about this, that may change that. But if all we've seen this week is all there is to come, it's not going to even be a blip in 2 years.
Agreed.
A lot of what people are talking about is because they believe there's more here that just hasn't come out yet.
I agree. But even, you know what? Like I said, unless, for the love of God, unless it turns into something criminal, I think he just avoids most of the crap.
I will say it's been very amusing, though, to watch.
It has been.
And apparently there's this thing, too, about, I mentioned it earlier, the using funds for Hurricane Sandy to produce tourism ads promoting New Jersey that just happened to have the governor of the state saying, hey, come to New Jersey, guys. Which, you know, it's actually, like, if you think of tourism ads for states, it's not uncommon for the governor to be in those ads.
Sure. I mean, Schwarzenegger was a whole bunch of California ads.
This is not uncommon. The difference here... that people are trying to make is that, you know, it was during an election cycle. So he was just getting his face out all over.
I've seen, I mean, I'm, you know, like, I've seen every governor do that even during an election cycle. If you're promoting tourism, you're promoting tourism. It doesn't matter when the hell you're...
The one other detail out there is apparently this was the more expensive bid for this project. The less expensive bid did not involve pictures of the governor.
Yeah. Well, I think that I mean, in practical terms... I mean, I don't see how you get a lot of mileage out of that accusation.
I would agree. This isn't going to go anywhere. Because everybody says, like I said, this is not uncommon. Governors are in tourism commercials all the freaking time. It's actually perceived, I would say, as part of their job.
Right.
You know? Because they're the face of the state.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see if Chris Christie has any additional adventures over the coming couple of weeks. And in the meantime, let's take a break and we will be back talk about what was next. Iran. We'll talk about Iran for a few minutes.
Back or maybe after I didn't run.
What? Okay. What? Where?
Maybe I didn't run.
You didn't run?
No.
Where? You're confusing me, Yvonne. Back after this.
That's too easy.
Back after this. Hey, you, listeners, we know you have thoughts about the stuff we say here on Curmudgeon's Corner. You probably think we're completely wrong about many things. Or perhaps you want to tell us that we're geniuses. That's always great. Or perhaps you just want to suggest a topic for us to talk about. All of these things are wonderful. We love to hear from you. So talk to us. If you prefer email, just email Sam. That's me, your prime curmudgeon, at abulsme@abulsme.com. That's spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Or tweet at us. I'm at abulsme, and Yvonne is at I-M-B-O. That's I-M-B-O-U. And while we may not do it every time, don't be surprised if we respond to you right here on the show during an upcoming episode. Thanks, everybody. We'll be looking for your email and tweets. So get right on that. Okay. Here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
So Iran, like we were saying, we started to get into this before, and maybe this will be a fairly short discussion, but what's been happening and why this is making news is that the people in favor of additional sanctions against Iran have been building up their numbers over the last few weeks and getting more and more senators, specifically, like the Republicans are pretty much all on board with this, but they've been getting Democratic senators to sign on and folks in the House too, to basically sign on and say they're for this. Now, to be fair, these sanctions, if I understand correctly, are set as they're not slap these sanctions on right now. They're slap these sanctions on if the diplomacy the president is doing fails.
Mm-hmm.
But they're preemptively putting, okay, this is exactly what's going to happen on the table. Whereas what the president wants them to do is basically shut the hell up, get out of the way, let me do my negotiations.
Right.
And then, if it fails, okay, then do what you're going to do. But don't preempt it because it's getting in the way of the discussions. And the Iranians have said outright, if there are new sanctions, they're done. Now, who knows if they'll back that up? But what's been happening is the total in the Senate, it's a two-thirds override for veto. And the number of senators who've said they're for this has creeped up over 60 now. It's not quite at 67. I saw one article saying they thought they had 67. But it's getting close. And so that's why there's nervousness here, because the president, has yet to veto anything in his presidency. It just hasn't come up.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
Well,
I guess Congress hasn't passed much, so it's kind of tough to be vetoing if you don't pass anything.
Well, if you think of it, the vetoes happen most often when both houses of Congress are controlled by the opposite party than the president.
Right.
That's not the case right now.
That's not the case.
Right now, you need the Democrats in the Senate on board in order to pass anything.
Right.
So it's relatively unlikely to get something that the president would want to veto. However, this is getting close. I don't think it's going to happen. But the fact that the Congress is doing this is just sort of... we made predictions about how the Iranian negotiations would go. And this is just a fly in that ointment that makes it all the more difficult to do. And what you see is all of these forces... I have a very hard time comprehending this effort as anything other than an attempt to sabotage the diplomacy. The people involved, of course, say we're not trying to sabotage diplomacy at all. We're just trying to have the heavy stick to carry along with whatever they're doing on the diplomatic side. But I mean, you hear a lot of these people talk, and they don't want a deal. They don't want anything that's going to let, the Iranian regime, quote unquote, get away with it. And we're not even talking about getting away with actually producing nuclear weapons. It's just
new what?
Nuclear. I'm going to say it that way. Damn it! Okay. It's okay. My goddamn accent.
Okay, W. Okay.
Jimmy Carter said that too.
Okay.
So I'm in good company, damn it. I can say nuclear if I want to, but I don't, damn it. Anyway, it just certainly seems like the folks who are pushing this kind of stuff are not coming into it with a, hey, the ideal outcome for us would be, a peaceful negotiation that results in a deal. They don't want a deal. They want to have sanctions until the Iranian regime is completely strangled and capitulates entirely, which is an unlikely result of sanctions anyway. It fundamentally doesn't deal with the realities of the situation on the ground, and the fact that, this is... having a nuclear program is a matter of pride for Iranians of all stripes. There is no opposition. Like, you talk about sort of the liberal Iranians. I mean, for God's sake, the president who's in charge now is a quote-unquote reformer compared to the previous one. But even the people who were, doing demonstrations in the streets a few years ago, if you poll them, if you ask them, you've talked to them, they all agree that they want to keep the nuclear program. Now, of course, they will also say that it's all about peaceful energy. It's not about weapons. And the supreme leader or whatever is also, has come out time and time and time again in saying that nuclear weapons are anti-Islamic. It's a sin to use them, etc. But you have a fundamental disconnect between the people who are sort of, we believe any of that, or we don't, or even if we don't, basically, even if we had a deal, we don't trust them, they'll do it anyway, And I don't know. I mean, there's certainly reasons not to trust the Iranians, but I just don't get the people who are like, we shouldn't even try negotiating. The White House themselves said the people who are for this really ought to just come right out and say that what they want is military intervention in Iran.
Right.
And of course, the people in question took offense at that and saying that's not what we're saying at all.
Oh, bullshit. But that is what they want. I mean, these guys have been chopping at the bit and freaking bombing Iran for so damn long. It's what they want. They want another fucking war.
Bomb, Iran.
Exactly.
That was John McCain.
Yeah, yes, I know.
A number of years back.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they just want a fucking war. I think it's stupid. I mean, they keep insisting on it. They keep saying that supposedly they don't want it, but the reality is that they keep pushing on it, so, give me this bullshit story that you don't want one. You guys want a war.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think this effort will fail. I think the Obama administration will be able to continue their negotiations without this. I think what's actually going to prevail is that the leaders in Congress are going to say, we've shown that we have the support to do this, so let's keep it in our back pocket and use it if it becomes clear the negotiations are failing.
Right.
And okay, maybe that can be part of a carrot and stick approach with the Iranians, but I think it would be incredibly premature to go ahead and pass this kind of thing now. And I think the people who are pushing for it are, you know, it's all about sabotaging the effort. And the reason you've got this bipartisan support is that you've got sort of the convergence of the neocons and the Israel lobby and a few other factors. And so you've got a number of forces here that are really hard to resist.
Neocons. I like that term. I like the neocon thing. And I hadn't heard somebody talk about neocons in a while. There you go.
They're still out there.
Yeah, I know. I thought they were dead or something. I mean, they've been so discredited. I mean, let's face it, but, you know, well.
Okay. Let's take another break. We'll be back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are.
We are here?
Net neutrality. Have you followed this at all?
No, not a clue. Not a clue as to what may have recently happened. No.
So what happened was, first of all, a number of years back, the FCC decided to classify. I'm going to get the words wrong here. Classify internet service providers not as common carriers. I forget the other term they used, but some sort of service provider rather than in the same class as the phone company. And one of the differences here, it affects very highly how things are regulated. Like the phone company has a lot of regulations around what it can and can't do. It has it's required to give equal levels of service. There are all kinds of restrictions on it. Whereas instead, internet providers are for the most part in the same class as like cable providers, and of course, in many cases they actually are cable companies. Right. But the difference being how you go about providing your service. So what the government had done is say, even though we haven't classed internet service providers as common carriers, we are going to put on these set of restrictions that basically enforce the core bits of net neutrality. And for those who don't know, net neutrality is basically just the idea that all traffic on the internet is equal and should be treated as such by network providers. So that if you're going from your computer and accessing Netflix, or if you're going to access abelsmay.com, my personal website, it's treated the same. There's no preferential treatment, and Comcast can't, for instance, say that traffic to Netflix will be preferred over traffic to CNN or vice versa or anything like that. So they put a number of restrictions on that. What the court did today is say that you have chosen not to classify them as a common carrier. Therefore, you can't impose these additional restrictions on them. So the end result of that is right now, as of this moment, companies will be free to do sort of preferential treatment type things. So like one of the things that was going around when people were lobbying against this a few years ago, for instance, was an example where, you know, internet service providers could start providing your internet in tiers, much like you get cable, so that you get packages of, you know, channels. So like, oh, you want ESPN? You have to buy the sports package. Right. You know, if you want streaming Netflix, you have to pay for your movie package. And oh, by the way, it's extra to get Netflix streaming, but we're Comcast, and if you want to stream from Comcast, hey, that's free.
Right.
And so this is what people were afraid of, and there's a lot of other more complicated things that could be done. I saw some stuff today, for instance, talking about how they might do you could have sponsored stuff where, like, you could actually have Facebook pay for your data connection in exchange for getting even more information about you or something like
Correct.
That. Or all sorts of other arrangements.
And or so, just also, or I just heard just arrangements where they were talking about just flat out, hey, I want my traffic to have priority. I mean, we make revenue off of it. I'm paying AT&T to give priority to my traffic, period.
Right. So, done. So for instance, Netflix would start paying, you know, a monthly fee to ISPs all over the country to make sure that their traffic got through at the highest possible speed.
Right. Exactly.
And so there, of course, you know, arguments on both sides of this. On the folks who are saying, hey, net neutrality is bad anyway, they say, look, this lets you innovate, have all kinds of additional business models here, have all kinds of things. You can compete in the free market. You avoid the regulation.
It's not like you're stopping the other traffic. I mean, it's...
Well, there's nothing stopping you from stopping it. Other than, you know, presumably if you were outright stopping things, you would have a competitive disadvantage to people who weren't.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's the only thing. I mean, you know, and I'm sure, I mean, let's face it, if you have internet from a carrier and they're just flat out stopping that traffic and then others aren't, I mean, what are you going to do? You just switch carriers.
Well, it all depends, though. Like, if you think about it, like, probably the vast majority of people out there, their internet experience is, you know, less than 10 websites.
So, but my point is, if out of those 10, I got two of those blocked, I mean, wouldn't you go
well,
and
no,
say...
No, no, well, you give them those 10 and say if you want access to anything else, you pay. And so...
Okay, well...
You know, and so while... And then you effectively start creating a world where you're back almost in the AOL days, where you have this sort of walled garden of curated sites, and you know you can't just click off it to go to some other random place that you just found out about.
Oh gosh, now, AOL. That's why I just posted that picture today about some Steve Case talking out of his ass this morning. Jesus.
You know, now. You might say that, hey, well, you know, if that's what a lot of people want and they're not willing to pay for the other stuff, well, then so be it. But you also get, once you get into that world, it's you're sort of building in the infrastructure right off the bat to do all kinds of filtering to say these sites are okay, these sites aren't okay, and it just produces, you know, and you may well... And one of the things is, you may well have somebody who competes specifically on the idea of our ISP is completely
quite,
open.
I think people would be quite frustrated, okay, with I get that people would sell priority access, that they would sell, like, you know, include some premium services. But say, I don't know, I want to go see the website for my kid's school and I can't get there because I didn't pay that tier. I think people would be... quite irritated with that. That would make it just quite a useless.
Well, you know, but people are quite irritated right now at the channel packages on cable. And the fact...
Yeah, but two very different things. I mean, well, hold on. There isn't, like, a free channel for my kid's school where I get information from, Sam. I mean, we're talking information versus entertainment. The TV is just a provider of entertainment. There's very little, like, on-demand information you get from the TV. I mean, people use the internet not just to frickin' watch TV. I mean, actually, matter of fact, it's the opposite. Very few of that. Most people do it in order to access information, social network, that kind of stuff, etc. I mean, if I can't access my bank, I can't access my schoolwork... Right. I can't go to this. I mean, that's... I don't see...
There may be some that completely block some things. And I specifically see, you know, cases where they would actually market
my
that... Dick. Yes, Alex, I see. where people would market that as a benefit, like, you know, buy the no porn internet or whatever. But you know, let's grant that they don't block anything outright. They just, you know, some things are faster than others. Over time, that becomes effectively the same thing, because what you also have is, if you've got new innovators who are bringing out, you know, hey, here's my new site to compete with Facebook. But Facebook pays for the preferential treatment, and their site is super, super fast. But my new site, because, you know, I can't afford as a startup to pay the ISPs, guess what? It's slower. And it may not be quote-unquote slow, but it's slower than Facebook, and it builds the expectation. And because Facebook is faster, they can push more graphically rich things through, and they can do all kinds of things that I can't because I'm stuck on the slow lane. You know,
I get that. I mean, I get that. But, you know, I mean, let's face it, all of these pipes weren't built for free, man.
Well, no. Well, but most of them, of course, were actually built through government subsidies, you know, way back when. Or there's dark fiber that was built by companies that went out of business long ago.
Yeah, but, well, it cost a lot of people freaking money at some point. Okay, all right.
But often the money that was paid was often not paid by the actual current owners.
Oh, no. They did, but they paid pennies on the dollar.
The initial upfront cost was not. They paid something to get it afterwards.
They paid something to get it afterwards. I mean, but my point is, look.
Here's my ultimate take.
Look, you don't get a phone. You don't get a phone that doesn't that blocks like half your numbers from working. Okay, all right. You don't get. I mean, I get the thing. The analogy to TV just doesn't really fly totally with me with this. I mean, this is a communications device. It's more akin to your phone, okay? And yes, there were people with toll-free numbers, so you could call a toll-free number, you didn't have to pay. But you know what? There were all other providers that, you know what, you have to pay to go call them. And you know what? That didn't preclude new services, new resellers, and new stuff from coming out there.
This, for instance, is exactly one of the, just to do the parallel on what you just did, to the 800 numbers, one of the ways to do this, for instance, is the provider pays the fee to the ISP to not have data to them count against your data allowances.
Right.
And so, in effect, going to that site would be free, whereas going to some random new competitor would cost you money because you'd pay for the data.
Right.
And for something like a video streaming site, that makes a huge difference.
Yes.
And so, look, my ultimate take on this is I frankly think I'm very conflicted on this, because on the one hand, I feel like an internet that is a neutral internet ends up being a better internet. I think the best possible outcome were if ISPs really and truly were completely dumb pipes that provided no preferential treatment, did not provide services of their own. It's just, here's your pipe, you know, pay by the gigabyte, we're done. I think if ISPs were utilities and were treated as metered utilities exactly the same as the electric company, it would be a better world. However, I feel squeamish about the idea of getting there through government mandates saying we have to do it this way, because
you're a libertarian.
I've got that libertarian tendency, but also the reason is because government tends to fuck up that kind of thing.
Well, yeah.
Because
especially when they come to technology, they put these frickin' mandates that sometimes, you know, then 20, 30, 40 years later do certain goofy things to what the...
Right, because you mandated one thing because it seemed like a good idea right now, but you're not...
And then 30 years later, everything changes,
they're very slow to change those, and they get ingrained, right. Whereas the one thing about just letting it be laissez-faire is that... you know, it is much quicker to adapt to changing situations, but at the same time, telecommunication companies are some of the least customer friendly companies in the world.
Yes, sir.
Do I really want them? Yes, Alex.
Like, I found a figure goes with this.
Yes, you did. Yeah, let me finish talking
and
to Yvonne.
This goes on this, and this goes on this.
Yep. Okay. So anyway, yes, I mean, telecommunication companies and cable companies are known for...
Can you give me...
No, not right now.
...some new of those thingies because I just dropped some...
Paper clips?
Yes. Here, I need 10 more.
Here's the whole box. Take it with you. Have mommy help you. Okay.
Okay, all right, anyway.
Yeah, you got a couple more years here, Yvonne.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, no, I mean, cable companies, phone companies have, like, the worst possible reputation for good customer service because, in part, because they're in this middle zone, they're not a utility, but in many places, they provide monopoly or near-monopoly service where you don't actually have that many choices in terms of where to get your broadband from. Depending on your region, I mean, there's certainly some cities where there's more or less competition, but in much of the country, if you want broadband, you have one choice. And so it's because of a government-granted monopoly in the region. So you've got sort of the government stuff feeding on each other. I guess you could help that out by, you know, also killing the government-granted monopolies in regions. And then, you know, if somebody provides a service that's sucky, make it really easy for someone to come in to compete with them. But right now, that's not the case. So I feel very queasy about giving these providers even more power to control the internet experience and control what you can get to easily and what you can't and do all kinds of weird pricing because, you know, frankly, you know, it switching is hard for most people right now. There are not a lot of alternatives out there. And maybe I'd feel different if there were in any given city dozens to choose from. Alex?
Let me talk to you. I mean, more than 10 paper clips.
Well, that's why I gave you the whole box.
Thank you. I even dumped all of the paper clips out because I needed all of them.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, have mommy help you. Where's mommy right now?
In the train room.
Okay, go see her. Anyway, I don't know. I don't like either of the options here. I think, like, government being heavy-handed, government tends to fuck things up really badly. But on the other hand, these telecommunication companies are awful, too. And so I don't want to give them any more power either. Like, you know, I said this a couple shows ago on my solo show. You know, what I tend to dislike is the concentration of power. I don't really care so much if it's private power or government power. I don't like concentration of power. And what I see in these telecoms is concentration of power. And I actually see net neutrality as one way to fight against that.
Okay. All right.
But I don't know how to get there. I mean, the government could, at a stroke of a pen, simply reclassify them as common carriers and be done with this. Because this court case specifically was related to, if you don't classify them as a common carrier, then you don't have the right to regulate them in this way. If they were a common carrier, then you would. And the FCC commissioner could do that. But from what I've read, although the Obama administration officially supports net neutrality, they do not support the idea of considering ISPs to be common carriers and to regulate them as utilities, essentially. And we'll see if that changes. But that's where we are right now. There's very, very heavy lobbying amongst these companies to not be considered a common carrier because it puts all kinds of additional restrictions on specifically on things they cannot do.
Right.
And those are all things they are chomping at the bit to start making these deals with content providers to pay for preferential treatment. They want that money. So.
Anyway. All right.
Well, let's take a break. We'll be back.
Take a breaky.
And what's that? What's next? Google and Nest. Back after this.
Uh-huh. AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we are. So, big news earlier today, or yesterday, Google is paying some obscene amount of money to buy Nest, the smart thermostat.
And that's actually exactly my point about this. They paid such an obscene amount of money for this. I mean, they paid $3.2 billion for Nest. I don't think that Nest could be generating a lot more than $100 million in revenues. Okay? And they paid $3.2 billion for Nest. It's just outrageous. I don't know. They keep thinking that just by throwing all this money, they're going to cause some massive innovation. I mean, they think they can buy innovation. And I
ask mommy.
And I guess that's what they think they're doing with this. But I don't see how they're ever. I think it's a big waste of money. I mean, I like the Nest. Don't get me wrong. I think it's cool. I own one.
So can you help me? Because it's your foot messes in.
Because your feet are itchy.
Yes, and my heel.
And your heel.
Both heels and one foot.
I don't think I can do anything right now.
Help me. Help me.
Hold on just a second, Yvonne.
It doesn't make no problem.
Do hit.
Get the. Okay, I'm back. Okay, so like I was saying, I mean, 3.2, you know, my thing is, okay, Nest is all cool and dandy. I own two of them. I even got my dad to put one in his house. But $3 billion for this? Are you fucking kidding me?
So there are two things here. One, you know, there was an article I tweeted a little bit while ago from, it was on Mashable, about Google is eating Apple's lunch. And they talk about, you know, the acquisitions Google has been making and how sort of big and bold they are, whereas Apple buys little piddly things. And basically saying that, you know, Google's making a lot of speculative moves into things that may have long-term impact, even if they don't have immediate short-term stuff. I'm not sure how much I buy that, but it was an interesting article to read. It was on.
I think the guy's a moron.
Mashable.com. Google is eating Apple's lunch.
Listen, the guy is a moron. The guy doesn't see. Here's the thing, right? Let me put two figures. $15 billion between Motorola and Nest. Okay, all right. $15 billion fucking dollars. There is no way to ever make that kind of money back out of the shit they just bought between those two people. There just isn't, okay? It's insane, okay? It's just like some kind of fucking way for Google to get their rocks off or something, buying shit, okay? I guess they really fucking enjoy spending money But you know, if you're telling me about acquisitions, if I look at a lot of the acquisitions, Apple likes to make a lot of very quiet acquisitions of technology. Technology that they go and they spend a little money here, a little money there. It's not a splash. It's not something that everybody thinks it is, but it's sexy technology that all of a sudden turns into like stuff like the processor line that's in their phones or other stuff or other technology you see embedded and integrated into certain things. Stuff that makes sense at prices that make sense. But I'm sorry, when you went and you did two acquisitions for $15 billion, one which you've bled like $4 billion after that and have done nothing really in terms of hardware devices, the acquisition of Motorola has helped them nothing at all in terms of Android. Nothing. Not one thing. There is nothing that they gained. All they've done is bleed money. And now you go and you buy Nest, which, hey, I think Nest is cool, whatever, whatnot. I think it's great, no problem. But $3 billion? For what? A whole bunch of fucking thermostats? What the hell are we going to do with this shit?
So what do you think of the people who are like, well, this gives Google a portal to spy into people's homes?
Oh, they're idiots. What, they want to know my temperature? Fuck, they can get my temperature information all they want. What do I give a fuck? Oh my god! Google now knows that I keep the thermostat at 75 degrees! Big fucking deal!
Well, so they might know that, therefore, you have... You buy less sweaters than somebody who keeps it at 65.
Oh, give me a fucking break. I mean, come on! Seriously? I mean, my alarm company knows that when I'm in or out of the house, too. What am I gonna do? I'm gonna kill ADT? I mean, I don't know. Look.
Well, Google might buy them next.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't be surprised about anything. I mean, geez, I really think that Google is spending a lot of money foolishly on a lot of stuff. Okay, all right? I mean, that's what I think they're doing. I mean, the money spend has no rhyme or reason. It's just because, oh, it's cool. Let's pay $3 billion for it. I mean, really? I mean, I got to give credit to the guys at Nest that they got freaking Google to give them $3 billion for it. You know what I'm thinking is, listen, I'm sorry, but I think that Tony Fadell, okay, has got to be fucking like just rocking himself. I just made myself a fucking billionaire out of fucking thermostat. I mean, seriously. I mean, and I'm like, you know what? I mean, I got to give him credit. I'm going to go the opposite way. What a fucking deal. I mean, dude, I mean, the guy, I mean, yeah. I mean, genius.
So here's what that guy on that Mashable article, here's his conclusion couple of paragraphs. This cautious, arrogant approach has prompted Apple to cede an early lead in wearable computing to Google with Glass.
Fucking Glass. Okay, yeah.
Apple has also given its rival an advanced beachhead into the burgeoning Internet of Things segment. This comes as Google is thoroughly dominating Apple in smartphones, has effectively countered Apple TV with Chromecast, and is even outselling Apple in desktop hardware.
Uh-huh. In desktop hardware. Excuse me?
I presume they mean those Google Chromebook things.
Yeah, the ones that, like, my sister bought one for the house because she thought it could be a good replacement for a laptop, and it's fucking, like, sitting in a corner and nobody uses. Is that what they're talking about? That piece of shit?
Google's free hand with acquisitions doesn't please everyone. Motorola is still a sore point with investors, but it's hard to argue that the strategy has hurt Google's growth. Apple's response to Google's ambition has been to perfect its existing products, faster iPhones, Macs, and iPads. This has yielded a state-of-the-art product line, one that is deliberately limited. That's fine if Apple wants to once again become a high-end niche brand, but Apple rather incredibly became a mass-market provider of smartphones and tablets in the last few years. Perhaps that was a quirk of history. One thing is for sure, Google has a wildly different strategy. In an age when consumers buy into ecosystems as much as they buy products, Apple's cautious perfectionism may be sidelining the company.
Okay, you know, this guy keeps forgetting that.
That's Todd Wasserman. Wasserman.
Yeah, Mr. Wasserman. Okay, let me just clarify one thing. Apple, you know what, makes more profit in one quarter than I think Google makes revenue in a year.
right now, okay, at the rate they are. So it's a, they're in what niche and what fucking revenue growth? Listen, all the revenue growth in Android has gone to other people. It's went to Samsung, okay? And it didn't go to it didn't go to Google. They're not getting the revenue. And here's the other thing that happened that this moron didn't look. Samsung reported a massive drop in profit and revenue in the last quarter, okay? Which what it showed was that, yeah, Google and Samsung may be selling all the fucking units that they want. The problem is they're selling cheap shit, okay, that doesn't make money, all right? And Apple in the last quarter went and hammered them where the money is, okay? Hey, you want to sell shit that doesn't make any money? Hey, go right the fuck ahead. You know what? Sell all the fucking units you want. I'll take all the market share. I'd rather take the money, all right, of people that are spending it. But, you know, this guy obviously doesn't know anything about spending money or investing. Listen, and like I said before, I have no problem with acquisitions. And I have no problem with Nest. Like I said, I own a couple of them. But dude, you can't be going around and just because you liked a couple of guys and you like some fucking product and just going and spending $3.5 billion on this shit. I mean, money runs out at some point, dude. And Google doesn't have, like, unlimited pockets. Nobody does. Okay? Companies have proven that over and over. Consistently making bad acquisitions kills you. Listen, look at HP for God's sakes, all right? They kept overpaying for shit after shit after shit after shit for years and years, okay? All right? And eventually it got to them, okay? Google is not immune to that crap. You can't keep going and making acquisitions like this, you know, without any regard to profitability, without any regard to valuation, ad nauseum, okay? It's going to catch up with you. It is stupid, okay, what they are doing, okay? It may not catch up with them like right now, but I gotta tell you, if they keep overpaying for shit like this, it eventually will.
Now, do you see anything in terms of the technology that Nest has in their thermostats that could be repurposed into a, you know, a sensor network that provides Google with additional information that helps them better drive their advertising or something, where you take not the product as it exists today, but some of the underlying technologies that exist at the company and do something with it?
I think what the guys, I mean, they came up with something that was simple, intuitive, and easy to connect, and they were trying to enable more devices to the home to be able to do that. But, you know, look, I mean, the reality about that is about home automation, and a lot of people have proven this over the years. I mean, you know, the market isn't that big either, okay? All right? I mean, how much home automation can you do?
Well,
if you don't start getting into, like, refrigerators and, I mean, all these other devices, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you could create some framework.
Speaking of which, we bought a new refrigerator this week, and we chose not to get one that had apps on it.
Oh, so did I. I mean, a couple of what I got one last year. So that's my point. I mean,
having said that, part of that, the home automation thing is a function of the complexity that's been traditionally involved, and one of the things that Nest did that was successful here is they made it drop dead easy.
Thermostat. Yeah. I know.
And you have potentially, like, in the past, like, home automation stuff was the province of geeky hobbyists who were into the technology and wanted to try things out and were somewhat technical and stuff like that. If you break into making it truly mainstream by making it dead simple and easy so that it's being built into new homes and people can retrofit it just as easily as anything else and they just get the cool functionality for free, then you see more of that. Like, I was at
think about what they did. All they did was just simply fucking add Wi-Fi really to a thermostat and make it easy to use.
Yep.
It's not like it's some technology that's patented that is, like, non-existent that somebody can't just go and add.
Well,
Nest doesn't have a technology that just is a breakthrough that is separate from everything else. What they had was which basically it's like imitates a lot of what Apple did, which was just a combination of putting a couple of things together and putting them together in the right package with the right user interface. Okay, that's it. You know, great. Okay, so, I mean, my point is that if I go, okay, so I want to automate the house, so I just add Wi-Fi to all these other devices, like,
well, yeah, hook them up to your network, and you're done. When I was out looking at refrigerators, I was at the Lowe's or whatever, and there was a big display of, you know, a Wi-Fi-enabled front door lock. That you can,
right.
You know,
yeah, another company came up with that.
Lock
right.
And unlock it from your smartphone, and it keeps a log of who comes in and out, and all this kind of stuff.
And it looks a lot like the Nest.
It does look a lot like the Nest.
Yes.
Same bluish glow. Yeah.
Exactly. So my point is that you've got already somebody that's already fucking copied this, already making it into a fucking door lock. So my point is, why the fuck you pay $3.2 billion for these guys for something that, to be honest with you, was really easily copyable? I mean, it was. I mean, they're just the first guys that did it. I mean. Listen, I'm not dissing Nest. I mean, I like it. They did
the
thing.
Yeah, you said that like
it's
times.
Just a it's not worth that much money, is my point. So, I mean, so that's all I see. There's just, you know, some things are just worth a certain amount. That wasn't one of them.
Okay, let's take a quick break and then a couple minutes on 4K TVs and CES and stuff like that, and then we'll close it out. Back after this. Okay, you know, I generally, you know, CES is one of those things that happens each year, and I don't pay as much attention to it as some people. This time, it seems like the one thing that percolated out of it was the 4K stuff.
Well, but it's been around all year. I mean, I've seen a few 4K TVs in person.
The difference at CES was there are companies, it's a significant drop in the price point. Basically, from being a super luxury item to being competitive with, you know,
regular HD TVs. Because the first 4K TV I saw was, I think they were asking, like, when I saw it at the store, it was like $40,000 or some crazy shit.
And now I believe there were ones announced at CES that were under $1,000.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's all nice and dandy, but here's the one thing. So, all right, you can't get any broadcast programs in 4K.
Yep.
There's no real, like, video... DVDs don't play in 4K.
No.
I mean, it's really a box without content.
There are a couple of the network streaming sites that have said that they will support 4K, but the bandwidth isn't there for most people.
No. So it's a device,
frankly, just to be clear, you can stream HD. 1080i streaming from like Netflix and the others right now. Netflix and Apple, etc., all do streaming 1080i, but it's highly compressed. Like, and we've had this conversation before. Yeah. If you actually get a Blu-ray player and play a Blu-ray disc, there's a noticeable increase in quality over streaming it from an online network. And of course, that's highly variable based on your network bandwidth too. Like, if you've got a super high-speed connection, it's going to be better.
YouTube was supposedly coming out with some compression algorithm for 4K to make it be able to stream it better, so forth, whatever. But it's still not there anyway, and there's still no content for it, so it's, you know, I don't know, to me, it was like one of those, meh, yeah, great, 4K, big deal. I got nothing I can watch on it in 4K, so...
And I think that's... that. You know, there was a lot of talk about this chicken and the egg problem. Because, I mean, they do look very cool. I actually saw my first one in person. They look much better than a 1080p display.
Absolutely.
They do if you've got the content on them.
Right.
But, again, if you don't, then it doesn't do you a damn bit of good because there's nothing to watch on it. And so, you know, who's going to buy the TV before there's the content? Who's going to produce the content before there's the TV there? You know, there's the whole chicken and egg thing. But, you know, frankly, they had the same sort of issue rolling out HD in the first place, too. And it just means it takes a little while. Right. But
I know.
Step number one is if the hardware gets cheap, then people will buy it, Sam, because why not?
There isn't even 1080p programming right now. Okay, for television.
There's a lot.
No. I mean, I'm talking about broadcast programming. Okay, all right. You can get 1080p if you've got DVDs. If you use,
DVDs.
I mean, yeah, a Blu-ray DVD. Yeah, if you use that, but even like, I mean, none of the regular TV channels, ESPN or any of those sports, there's none of that broadcast in 1080p. They don't produce any content in 1080p. So they haven't even come to that. I mean, so the one thing is, shit, I mean, it's been like how long 1080p has been out, and we don't have content in that, so I'm not holding my breath about there being any 4K, you know, a lot of 4K content out there, except just movies and stuff like that. And
now, just to be clear, there are broadcast 1080i.
Right, 1080i, but not 1080p. Right. That's correct, yes. So, you know, I don't know. It's just a big, right.
Anything else out of CES? I mean, I agree with you. Like, 4K is cool. I think, here's the thing. If they drop down what's going to happen is the manufacturers will start just making that the default. Just like there are multiple levels of, you know, the 720p, the 1080i, there'll be a 4K level, and the high end will be 4K at first, and then it'll work its way down until you just go to the store and that's what they have, you know? And that's just how it's going to play out, and then the content will start catching up with it once the hardware is out there and lots of people have it, because people will just buy it because it's what's there to buy.
Right. Yep.
Anything else at CES strike your fancy at all? That's the main thing I heard.
The only thing was, I mean, everybody's making fun of Michael Bay, like, blowing up.
Yeah, you mentioned that a little bit last week. He's the guy who just walked out, right?
Yeah, he just walked out.
Because the teleprompter didn't work?
Because the teleprompter didn't work.
Has there been anything additional on that since the initial event?
No, not really. Other than Samsung was pretty embarrassed about the whole thing, but yeah. Well, there was like a whole bunch of replays and repeats of it. They kept playing it over and over in a whole bunch of different places. I mean, it was like, good God, I was like, oh, shit.
There were those virtual reality goggles that have been sort of vaporware for the last couple of years, apparently getting closer to coming out. I've heard people say good things about them, but as a gaming type thing.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing, I know I saw this 4K stuff and even Vizio and some other people talking about their TVs or whatever. I mean, it's going mainstream, but I mean, there was just not much. And it's one of the reasons why a lot of the big companies, like really Apple, pulled out. And I can't remember.
Microsoft's not there either.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, somebody was talking about, oh, Android took over a CES. Yeah, idiot. Everybody else pulled out because the show is just, you know, It's a show.
Okay, well, that's closing it out, I guess. So as usual, everybody, email me at abelsmay@abelsmay.com, or I'm Abelsmay on Twitter. Yvonne is I am Bo on Twitter. We love to hear. I should mention we did get one feedback on our request to send.
Money to
no,
us?
No, not money. Oh, you know, that would be nice. Damn. But our listener Bruce said, you know, first of all said that we had a great prediction show. So thank you very much, Bruce.
Well, thank you.
But also that we asked for listener predictions, and he gave us a link to his predictions. And I'm not going to read through all of them here, but they are a good read. I'd actually read them before we did our prediction show, because he posted them on December 31st. But that's at contrarianconformist.blogspot.com.
All right. So any interesting prediction that you would like to give an honorable mention that he made?
I'll give one from each of his categories. On financial economic, Alex, on Financial Economic, he said the Federal Reserve's tapering of bond purchases from $85 billion to $75 billion will not go any lower and could possibly be reversed back to 85.
That's an interesting one.
On Foreign Affairs, he said the six-month interim deal between the U.S. and Iran will be successful and a follow-on deal, either temporary or permanent, will be reached.
Okay.
On politics, he said Edward Snowden's leaks will continue to be published throughout the year and will be major stories. The stories will shift from the collection of metadata to the bulk collection of content.
Okay.
In entertainment, he said the Bible will make a comeback in the box office. Bible-based movies will be among the top grossing pictures of the year.
Okay, all right, that's an optimistic one.
And in technology, he said Microsoft will introduce a new a low-end notebook that competes with the Chromebook, maybe the Bing Book.
The Bing Book.
And he made a bunch more. That was just one from each of his categories. But it's a good read. Take a look.
Maybe call it the Bang Book.
The contrarianconformist.blogspot.com, and the post was from December 31st.
Very interesting.
So anyway, that's it. Thanks everybody for listening. And Alex, do you want to help say goodbye? Do you want to say goodbye, Alex?
Bye-bye.
Wait.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye everyone. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
Have a good week.
Now,
bye.
What? Now your podcast is Odin.
That's right.
Bye.
Next time you will talk to him. Shorter this time.
Next time shorter?
Yeah. Because I will need your help making the big circle with the dash. Big circle.
Okay.
Okay, great. All right.
Okay, bye everyone.
We'll get to work on that. Bye-bye.